evening, friend. Welcome. Welcome to the Inner Sanctum. This is Raymond, your host, teller of strange tales. Come in, if you dare.
Costello, stop all that noise.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers. That's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun.
Classic Gas Radio Show with me, your host, Sheldon Snow, featuring classic radio programming from the golden age of radio, the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. Well, today, even some from the 70s. I know, right? So don't think about yesterday or worry about tomorrow. Join me as we travel back to a simpler era on the Classic Gas Radio Show. Coming up first is Crime Classics. It ran on CBS Radio from June 15th, 1953 to June 30th, 1954. Today's episode is from June 6th, 1953. Here is Crime Classics, the Classic Gas Radio Show.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. I'm going to tell you another true crime story. Listen. The man who just fell down the stairs is Colonel James Fisk, Jr. Although the Colonel is a man given to the consumption of dozens of Blue Point oysters and bottles of heady wine at a sitting, his friends were given to pointing him out as a man inordinately steady on his feet. So why did he tumble down the stairs? And in New York's Grand Central Hotel, no less, where stair tumbling was frowned upon, the Colonel didn't slip. He wasn't pushed. He was shot. The sudden presence of two bullets in him had upset his equilibrium. The man who's running away is the man who just shot the Colonel. His name, Edward S. Stokes. Until recently, the Colonel's very dear friend. There he goes. And tonight, my report to you on the checkered life and sudden death of Colonel James Fisk, Jr.
Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. And now once again, Thomas Highland.
Colonel Fisk lay at the bottom of the stairs a few minutes before 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, January the 6th, 1872. He was dying. His life was coming to an end. And he would be sorely missed by his family, Mrs. Fisk and the children, and by his intimates, among whom were Jay Gould, Boss Tweed, and the heavier stockholders of the day. A man dying, and I know the precise instant when his dying began. It started some months ago in a rather ornate house in Washington Square. Two women were talking, and the younger one said,
"Annie, how can I meet Colonel Fisk?"
That was the instant. And the older one said,
"Oh, dearie, dearie, dearie."
But the younger one was not young enough to take dearie for an answer.
"I mean it, Annie. I want to meet him. He's so wealthy, isn't he? And all I have is a black and white silk dress and an empty purse. So very empty, dear Annie." Oh, orphans in the rain and empty purses sadden me so, dear Josie.
And I've heard he's coming here tonight to visit with you.
The dear Colonel says I set such a good table. Dear Josie.
Yes?
Walk over there to that cabinet, dear Josie. In the very bottom drawer, you will find two candlesticks given to me by the minister from Egypt. Get them. Yes. They are heavy, aren't they? Now put them on the table. Mm-hmm. And light them. Good. Now blow them out, gently.
Well, Annie?
Dear Josie, will you join the dear Colonel and me for dinner tonight?
So nice of you to ask. I'd be delighted, dear Annie.
So it was that Colonel Fisk and Josie Mansfield met. It was a highly successful meeting.
I kiss your hand, Josie.
You're a very sweet man.
Isn't she a dear?
So lovely.
And so poor.
So sad.
The Colonel was a man easily touched. And this was the era for young widows, beautiful and penniless. It was the era for weeping at the mere thought of such a situation. It was a decade of compassion and champagne. And this night, the meeting night, was one of the most poignant of the decade.
Tomorrow, Josie, a jewel to lie against the throat.
Oh, Colonel.
My carriage will call for you at noon and bring you to me.
And where will you be?
At Tiffany's.
The necklace counter?
Of course, my dear. More wine? Diamonds become you.
Oh, Colonel. Oh, Colonel.
Look at it, dear. Do you like it?
It's very nice.
And it's all yours.
Oh, thank you. I've always wanted a home of my own. And servants of my own.
Six.
Kiss me, Colonel.
Good evening, Colonel.
Evening, Quimby. This is Mr. Stokes.
May I take your cane, sir?
Thank you, Quimby.
Is, The mistress is in the drawing room. She's waiting for you.
This way, Stokes.
Oh, Colonel. And you must be the Colonel's best friend, Mr. Stokes.
I hope this is no imposition, ma'am.
Preparing dinner? Certainly not. I just sat here all day, listening to the new present the Colonel sent me, while the servants made ready.
Do you like the new music box, my dear?
It reminds me of you when you're away from me.
Such a pretty speech. How fortunate you are, Colonel.
Oh, wait till you taste her pheasant a la Esther.
I can hardly wait.
Will you two excuse me for a moment?
Where are you going, Colonel?
I left a small package for you out in the carriage, my dear.
And oh, of course, we'll excuse you. So, you're Mr. Stokes.
So you're Josie.
I must say he was right. You are elegant.
He was right. You are very lovely.
You're younger than he told me.
And you... You're...
What?
You are.
Will you help me light the candles?
Josie.
Will you help me with the fireplace?
Josie.
The music box is run down. Will you...
Josie.
You won't help me with anything. You're wicked.
Yes, I am.
You're very wicked.
At the time Josie whispered this tender criticism, Mr. Edward Stokes was 5 feet 9 inches high. His head was covered with glossy curls, his complexion clear, his features regular, and his eyes dark blue. He was dressed in the height of fashion, and his diamond studs gleamed brilliantly. And after the colonel returned with a forgotten package...
Oh, a ruby pendant. Thank you, Colonel.
You're very welcome.
And after the wine was drunk and venison devoured, and the fingers dipped in the lemon water, after that evening of old friends and new, after that, there was a new day. And there was this.
Good morning, Mr. Stokes.
Good morning, Quimby. Is,
The mistress is in the sitting room. She's waiting for you.
Thank you, my man. Josie.
Edward. Awake, Edward. I was out this morning early shopping. Here, I bought something for you. Open it.
Josie, a pearl stick pin. There was no need for you to...
Oh, yes, there was. Now be quiet.
Several other scenes between these wild, storm-tossed lovers you might care to eavesdrop upon, since they'll give you a better understanding of the currents sweeping these two upon violent shores, like this one.
The best champagne in New York. Now take off your little shoe. Here, use my mallet, dear. This croquet has brought the pink to your cheeks. Make your shot.
As is always the case in skullduggery of this sort, there is an in the meanwhile. So... In the meanwhile, in the Park Avenue home of Colonel James Fisk, Jr., the colonel and his lady. The children have been tucked away for the night, the servants snug in their quarters, as were the animals. A quiet hour, an hour for a man and his wife, and for family discussions.
You fool! You cheat! Blackguard!
Dear, the children, you'll awaken them.
A woman like that!
Have you no compassion in your heart? She's a widow.
Ha, ha.
Alone in the world. I am but her advisor.
Ha, ha. Now that's all you are.
What are you talking about?
What all of New York is saying.
And that is?
Ha, ha.
And that is?
The most concerned is the last to know.
Know what?
Your precious widow and Edward Stokes.
What?
Ha, ha, Colonel. Now you know what I've been through. The aggravation. The shame. The heartache, the sorrow, the
unrequited love. I'm sorry, Colonel. It's so late at
Quimby.
Night.
Where is...
The mistress is in her boudoir.
Go awaken her.
Who is it, Quimby?
It's not Mr. Stokes, ma'am.
Why, good evening, Colonel.
What's this I hear about you and that scamp, Edward Stokes?
Why, what have you heard?
That you and he...
Who told you that?
My wife.
You'd better go back to her, Colonel.
Then it's true.
I love him very much.
Josie.
Go back to your wife.
I warn you.
You warn me. You, Colonel?
Listen to me. I'll ruin you.
Please. Go home.
You and Edward Stokes. Mark my word. I'll ruin the both of you. My promise to you, if it takes the rest of my life.
The Colonel left, The colonel was driven to his club, where the colonel spent the night. And the next morning, early, the colonel began the final week of his life. You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland, and his report to you on the checkered life and sudden death of Colonel James Fisk, Jr. I'd like to set the coordinates for you again. Take a reading of exactly where we are in time and space. The year is 1872. The place is New York City. Now, 1872 was a vintage year for pearls in the bottom of champagne glasses, of fatted railroad stocks, and the diamond harvest was spectacular. The term rags to riches was coined on a day in this year, when a raggedy sewing machine girl was summoned from her chores, taken by the hand, dressed in silk, then released into a gilded cage. New York City at this time was a center for many similar dramas, one of which we're concerning ourselves with. Colonel James Fisk, Jr. had compassion for a widow named Josie Mansfield. Josie Mansfield had compassion for the colonel's friend, Edward Stokes. The colonel, upon hearing of this arrangement, immediately went into action, in a colonel-like manner.
Your Honor, I want to swear out a warrant for the arrest of Edward S. Stokes for embezzlement.
Why, certainly, Colonel. We'll have the culprit in jail in no time at all.
Inside with you, Mr. Stokes.
Jailer.
Yes, sir, Mr. Stokes.
Do you have the list?
Yes, sir. Your living room furniture, the portraits, and the bed. I'll have them here in no time at all.
Edward Stokes was a model prisoner for 2 days. He was then released when the charge against him was dropped. Not to be outdone, he went into action in a manner which gained the plaudits of his cronies.
Your Honor, I want to swear out a warrant for the arrest of Colonel James Fisk, Jr. for false imprisonment.
Why, certainly, Mr. Stokes. We'll have the culprit in jail in no time at all.
Jailer?
Yes, sir, Colonel. The living room furniture, your easy chair in the library, and the bed. I'll have them here in no time at all.
War of nerves, tactics, and strategies, and reprisals. And the real victors, the gatherers of the loot, the lawyers. So the Colonel and Mr. Stokes called a truce, waved white napkins at each other across a gleaming table at Delmonico's.
Stokes, I think we both acted like children.
I agree with you, Colonel.
Let me fill your glass. Yeah. A toast. To a friendship.
Our friendship, Colonel.
Enough of jails and lawyers and arguments. Life is too short.
I'll drink to that, too. Colonel?
And we can settle our affairs like men.
I'll drink to that, too.
No, wait. Let's settle our affairs first.
Delighted.
There is only one thing which stands in our way.
Obviously.
Josie Mansfield.
You're right.
Stokes, you're not ever to see her again.
Colonel?
You agree?
Colonel, you're a fat, stupid fool.
I accept that. But you're never to see Josie Mansfield again.
Josie told me that if I saw you, I was to tell you you are a fat, stupid fool.
And you are. I warned you once, Stokes. I'm not going to warn you again.
Then I'll warn you. If you make any trouble, Colonel, you won't live to enjoy it. My promise to you.
Good evening, Mr. Stokes. The mistress is in the parlor.
Josie. Josie. Josie, wake up.
Oh, Edward. How nice, Edward.
Dearest, listen. It's important. Are you awake?
Well, of course, I just drowsed off. I was reading, waiting for you.
And now you're here.
Josie, listen. It's about Colonel Fisk.
Oh, please don't talk about him. Not now.
He's ruined me.
What are you talking about?
I am a pauper.
You? Why, you're one of the wealthiest young men.
No, not now. I don't have a penny.
What happened?
The stocks I had, all my assets.
Well?
The colonel forced down the value of the Erie Railroad stocks, wiped me out.
Oh, Edward, I'm so sorry.
Josie.
Yes?
I'm poor now. Do you want me to leave? Never come back?
Darling Edward. Darling, dearest Edward.
Josie.
We'll beat him. We'll destroy the colonel, you and I together.
That's impossible. He's too powerful.
He's a weakling.
What?
I can prove he's a weakling. He writes letters.
Letters?
I saved them. And that's not all.
What do you mean?
Dealings he's had. Dishonest business dealings. Would you like to look at them?
Dearest Josie, I love you so much. So that's why I thought it more discreet to hire a cab, Colonel. Surely you understand.
I must tell you, Stokes, when I agreed to meet you, to ride with you in a hired hack at night...
I explained the necessity of secrecy, Colonel.
As indeed you did not. You merely said secrecy. That is why I must tell you I am confused. Have you made another decision about Josie?
A tentative decision, Colonel.
Tentative?
Yes, it depends on you.
Oh?
I need money.
I know.
Badly.
I know.
Colonel?
Yes?
You love Josie very much, don't you?
I understand you now, Stokes.
I thought you would.
You want me to reimburse you for the money you've lost?
$250,000.
I know. In return for which, you'll give up Josie.
That's right.
I'm sure there must be a name for you, Mr. Stokes.
I'm sure of it.
I had an experience last night. I had dinner at home with my wife. The children were with us. After dinner, I played on the floor with my children. I heard them laugh. I heard my wife laugh, too. And I laughed, too. And there was no other meaning behind my laughter except enjoyment of my family.
Very touching.
And rewarding.
Then you're not interested in my proposal.
I'll get off at the next corner, Mr. Stokes. Tell the driver.
Of course. Next corner, cabby.
Well, Mr. Stokes, give my regards to Josie. Tell her I'm truly sorry for what's going to become of her. Goodbye, Mr. Stokes.
Colonel, wait.
I'm sorry, we have nothing else to talk about.
Except the letters.
What letters?
You have a rich way with words, Colonel. I congratulate you.
I don't understand.
Oh, of course you do. The letters you wrote to Josie.
I see.
All of them.
I see.
They could ruin you.
Perhaps.
I remember one of the letters opened with... Dearest Josie, my poor little widow, your sad tears still on my shoulders.
$10,000.
And another, Dear Josie, this morning I was at Tammany Hall and with Boss Tweed arrangements were made to relieve the city.
$10,000.
$250,000 for the letters, Colonel.
$10,000, or you may publish them or do what you want with them.
Surely you're not serious.
Good night, Mr. Stokes.
$10,000.
Bring your letters to me tomorrow and you shall get your money. Good night.
An old almanac I have occasion to call on now and then says that Saturday, the 6th of January, in the year 1872... is the 66th anniversary of the Volunteer Fire Department of Roanoke, Virginia. Also, it predicts the day will be cold and clear with high westerly winds. So, we'll make an assumption. On a cold, clear Saturday morning, buffeted by the high westerly winds, Mr. Edward Stokes made his way to the Wall Street office of Colonel Fisk. Here, he received more coldness and $10,000. Here, he deposited with the colonel a stack of letters, wrapped in blue ribbon and sachet. Then Edward Stokes called on Josie Mansfield. He told her of the transaction. We must imagine that Josie's reaction
went something like this.
You idiot! You bumbling, spineless idiot!
But, Josie...
I should have known better than to trust you with those letters.
But $10,000 is better than nothing.
If you'd had the courage...
He told me $10,000 or nothing.
If you'd had the courage, he would have given you everything he owned. Why, the mere possession of the letter dated June 16th, 1871, would have been a fortune 10 times the amount you got.
But...
But what?
You have your jewels, this house. Surely you must be worth nearly $1 million yourself.
I love you, dear Edward, but that's my money. You'll just have... What is it, Quimby?
Miss Annie Wood wishes to speak with you.
Tell her I'm busy.
She said it's extremely urgent.
Extremely urgent.
Hello, Annie.
Josie, dear Josie, and dear Mr. Stokes.
Hello.
The judge came to see me for lunch a little while ago.
Judge? What are you talking about?
Judge Tripler.
Well, I don't see...
He just come from court. He just signed a warrant.
Yes?
For the arrest of dear Mr. Stokes on the charge of blackmail.
Colonel Fisk?
Yes. The dear judge told me that the colonel asked him to sign such a warrant. Josie?
Yes?
We'll be seeing each other more often, won't we, dear Josie?
Publication of the time. I quote, "The next that was seen of Edward Stokes, as far as is known, was at a few minutes before 4 o'clock, when he was walking carelessly up and down the main corridor of the Grand Central Hotel on the parlor floor. This corridor is one story above the street, is parallel with Broadway, and at its northern end is reached by a staircase from the street. Passing and repassing the head of the staircase, Stokes glanced furtively down the stairs. It was nearly 4 o'clock when Colonel James Fisk, Jr. drove up in a carriage to the door. Stepping out of his carriage and walking briskly across the pavement, he passed through the outer door of the hotel. When he had done so, he was heard to inquire for a certain Annette Latour. He was told she was in and started up the stairs.
Good afternoon, Colonel.
Stokes, don't!
You'll ruin me.
For the love of heaven, someone help me!
Edward Stokes was restrained a block away. The colonel didn't die immediately. He was lifted by 3 bellhops and taken to chambers supplied by the management. Doctors were called, and the colonel joked with them, as he joked with his many friends who came to visit him. He joked with everybody. Next day, in the middle of a joke, he died. Thomas Stokes pleaded self-defense. He was convicted of manslaughter in the third degree. Josie Mansfield spent her remaining days with her aunt, Miss Annie Wood.
And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Long Melford in the county of Suffolk in England. The year, 1739. My report to you will be on the shrapneled body of Charles Drew, Sr. Thank you. Good night.
James Fisk, Jr., tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. James Fisk, Jr. was played by William Johnstone. Featured in the cast were Mary Jane Croft, Martha Wentworth, Steve Roberts, Harry Bartell, Paula Winslow, and Charles Calvert. Bob Lamond speaking.
Classics has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
From June 6th, 1953, that was Crime Classics. Coming up next is a Western that aired on CBS Radio, only for 16 episodes, though, although it was done quite well. It is Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. This one is from March 2nd, 1958. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone on the Classic Gas Radio Show.
Slaughter's my name. Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's big business. I got a big stake in it. And there's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory, from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas, and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
About 10 pounds of dust this last couple of weeks.
Won't be much longer, Jim. With luck, we'll be in Tombstone day after tomorrow.
Won't be none too soon for me. Once I get out of this saddle, I'm gonna stay out of it a while.
You never been to Tombstone, Jim. A couple of things you ought to know.
Such as what?
It'll be a pretty wild town. Ah, they got some peaceful, law-abiding citizens there, all right. They've also got some of the toughest drifters in the world.
Gunslingers?
Yeah. So remember, you keep that itchy trigger finger of yours under control.
Don't you worry none about me.
Hold it.
What's the matter?
A little smoke coming out of that brush over there. Jim, keep the herd headed straight. Come on, Wichita, let's take a look.
Right. Could be a campfire.
Yeah.
This is Indian country around here, ain't it, Slaughter?
Indian country, bandit country, rustler country, you name it.
Well, as soon as we get up to the edge of the wash here, we... Yeah, there it is. Little campfire down near that clump of ocotillo.
The fire's out, but it's still smoking.
No sign of life around. You reckon...
Hold it. Movement back there in the mesquite. All right. Come on out of there. Come out.
I'm coming. Don't you shoot now.
Who are you?
My name's Ralston. He's got a leg wound, Slaughter.
What are you doing here?
You a marshal?
No.
I got into a scrape in Tombstone. I had to get out. With a souvenir in your leg, huh? It's not bad, but it slows me down. My horse got away from me last night, and I couldn't catch it. I had to hold up here.
And a scrape were you in?
I didn't do nothing wrong, mister. I'm innocent.
I didn't ask you about that. I asked what kind of scrape.
Slaughter.
Yeah, I see him. Two of them. Rifles across their saddles.
You think this fellow was a decoy to get us into a trap? No, no, that's not true. Wait a minute. One of them's wearing a badge.
Yeah. I've seen him before. Taggart, sheriff from Tombstone.
All right, Ralston. Just hold it right where you are. Don't try nothing.
That bad leg of his, sheriff, I doubt he's going to try much.
With fugitives, I don't take no chances, stranger. Thanks for rounding him up for me.
He's a fugitive, huh?
He sure is. My name's Taggart. I'm the sheriff of Tombstone. It's my deputy, Blackwell. Been trailing Ralston for 2 days now.
What's the charge?
Payroll robbery.
That's a lie.
You keep your mouth shut, Ralston. Everybody in Tombstone knows you did it.
Easy, Blackwell. He ain't gonna make no trouble. We'll see to that.
Payroll robbery, you say?
Yeah, one of the mines. He was supposed to be guarding it. Instead, he took off with it.
You got any witnesses?
You got plenty of evidence.
I asked you if you had any witnesses.
What business is it of yours?
Just a minute, Blackwell. I'm talking to Taggart.
Who are you, stranger?
Luke Slaughter.
Slaughter? I heard of you. Supposed to be pretty fast with a gun, ain't you?
It's a matter of opinion.
You ask me, it's more an opinion.
I didn't ask you, Wichita.
Oh,
you got a warrant for Ralston's arrest, Taggart. Well?
There's no time to get a warrant.
That's funny. Last I heard, there was a judge right there in Tombstone. Wouldn't have taken you very long. How about you busting right across the border without any papers or anything?
Slaughter, you got a bad habit of being insulting. That's a habit I'm going to break.
Now?
Let's take him, Taggart.
Can you take both of us, Blackwell?
We got the drop on you, Slaughter.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, too, Taggart.
Meaning what?
Those rifles of yours are pretty clumsy at close quarters. I don't think you got the drop on me at all. Let's find out.
I'm here to take my prisoner back to Tombstone.
Not without a warrant.
Well, now, you ain't going to...
Don't move that rifle unless you're going to use it.
You got a herd out there, Slaughter. You heading for Tombstone?
That's right.
And I'll see you in Tombstone.
It's fine with me.
Come on, Blackwell. Here.
Thanks, Slaughter. Thanks a lot.
Get Ralston up behind you, Wichita. Let's get back to the herd. By sunset, 2 days later, we were in Tombstone. We herded the cattle into the pens. Then we went to the Crystal Palace to collect our money from the cattle buyer, Ezra Canfield.
Well, I've checked them cattle over, Slaughter. He's in good condition, considering the distance you brought him. Here's your money.
Count it, Wichita.
Right.
What are your plans now, Slaughter?
Heading right back to Mexico. Pick up another herd.
Good. We got a lot of hungry miners here in Tombstone. Need all the beef we can get.
Now, don't tell me we got to leave right away, Slaughter. I want to see the sights around here.
Tombstone's not a very good town for you to be wandering around loose in, Jim.
I promise you I won't get in no trouble, Slaughter. I just want to do a little living for a change.
Money's all here.
All right. Jim, take it back to the hotel room. Sit on it.
But what about seeing the sights?
We'll talk about that later. Now get moving.
All right, doggone it.
Sounds like you sure spoiled his evening, Slaughter.
Well, I think we can arrange for him to get a couple of breaths of night air around here before we take off.
Taggart just come in.
I see him.
Well, Canfield, look like you ain't too particular who you do business with.
There's nothing wrong with them cattle he sold me, Sheriff. I checked them myself.
That ain't what I meant. I'm talking about Slaughter here obstructing justice, refusing to turn over a fugitive to me. You'd like to get a little... Where are you hiding Ralston now, Slaughter?
You ought to know. You're the sheriff.
What's that signify?
I had a little talk with Ralston on the trail. All he wanted was to be sure of getting back here in one piece to stand a fair trial. Turned himself into your night guard at the jail.
You're bluffing.
Well, that'll be an easy bluff to call. Why don't you go find out?
I aim to.
He's a pretty poor excuse for a sheriff, Slaughter. But he's all we got.
Well, what do you expect? Who'd want the job? Tombstone's a rough town.
Not too rough for the right man. I think you could be the right man, Slaughter.
Me?
Yeah. There are a lot of us around here who'd like to see law and order established once and for all, Slaughter. And we know about you. Know you can handle the worst of them.
You know, that might not be such a bad idea, if you ask me.
Nobody did, Wichita.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Canfield. My business is cattle, not law enforcement.
In Tombstone, law enforcement's everybody's business.
No.
Get over, Slaughter.
If you was to take the job, Slaughter, I'll bet Jim would be glad to be your deputy.
Yeah, that's all I'd need around here. He'd probably start more fights than he'd stop. Come on.
Slaughter, I wonder about you sometimes. I wonder if you wasn't already a lawman once.
I wonder about you too, Wichita. I wonder if you were born with that big nose of yours, or did you grow it later?
Had it as long as I can remember. But hey, it's raining. I didn't know it ever rained in Tombstone.
It isn't very heavy. Won't last long.
Slaughter.
What is it, Taggart?
What kind of play is this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ralston is what I'm talking about.
I told you. Ralston turned himself in.
Yeah, well, he ain't in the jail now. That cell door is wide open.
What?
And what's more, my night guard's been pistol-whooped. Looked like Ralston had a friend helped him to break out. You wouldn't know who that'd be, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Hey, Sheriff. A horse has been stolen from Wilkie's livery stable. That's probably how Ralston made his getaway.
Looks like I got you to thank for this, Slaughter.
Think so?
Yeah. If I handled things my own way, this wouldn't have happened. Next time you cross me is going to be the last time.
Don't be too sure of that, Taggart.
You know, Slaughter, you got a natural talent for making enemies.
A man like Taggart, it isn't hard. Come on, let's get back to the hotel.
I still don't get it, Slaughter. Why would Ralston have gave himself up and then busted out of jail?
Some men you never know about till they make a move. Ralston didn't do it alone. He had to have a friend.
Maybe his friend convinced him he wouldn't get a fair trial.
Maybe.
Anyway, he... Slaughter, look, Jim, on the floor.
He's been slugged. He's out cold.
Wait a minute. The cattle money.
Yeah. It's gone.
In a moment, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone returns. Whenever significant events take place, you can count on CBS News to bring you first-hand and well-detailed descriptions of what is happening, often broadcast right from the scene of the event. You can count on CBS newsmen, too, to make certain that fact is emphasized and conjecture clearly labeled. Each correspondent on staff brings a fine background in reporting to his job. And in the tradition of the CBS newsroom, they all share an uncompromising respect for the truth. So why don't you let CBS News keep you as fully informed as an expert? And now, Act Two of William N. Robeson's production of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Jim, come on, boy. That's it, boy. Come on, come out of it.
You all right, Jim?
Oh, I guess so.
What happened, Jim?
I don't rightly know, Slaughter. I heard a noise. It sounded like it come from outside the window on the balcony.
Yeah?
I went over and stuck my head out to look. Something awful hard hit me on the side of the head. I went down. And then somebody climbed through the window into the room. I tried to get to my feet, and he hit me again. Well, that's the last I remember.
You get a good look at him, Jim?
No, his hat was pulled down low, and he had a bandana over his face.
Was it Ralston?
I don't know. He took the cattle money, didn't he?
Yeah.
Fine guard I turned out to be.
Yeah, it's too late to worry about that. Just be glad you have a hard head.
Slaughter.
Yeah?
It was Ralston.
How do you figure?
Remember that ring he wore? Mexican work, looked like?
What about it?
Had a green stone set in it, carved like a snake's head.
Yeah, I remember.
Here it is. I found it on the floor. Must have been jarred loose when he slugged Jim.
It's a stone, all right. Well, looks like Taggart was right after all.
Well, well. So you finally wised up to Ralston, huh, Slaughter? Too late, of course.
Maybe not, Taggart. Wichita.
Yeah?
You got the grub ready?
Packed in the saddlebags.
Maybe next time you won't interfere when I'm trying to enforce the law.
How about the bedrolls, Wichita?
All ready.
You're going after him, huh?
What do you think?
I think there's a couple of things wrong with that idea.
Like what?
In the first place, you got a poor chance of finding his trail at night in the rain.
Rain's letting up. It'll stop soon. I want to be ready to start trailing as soon as it's light.
The second thing is wrong. Law enforcement is my business, Slaughter, not yours.
That's my money he got away with.
Yeah, but there's still a matter of that mine payroll he's got stashed away somewheres. Now, look, it's Slaughter. Ain't no sense our being at each other's throats all the time. You crossed me once, it riled me, but I'm willing to let it pass. I figure everybody's entitled to one mistake.
Depends on what the mistake is, doesn't it?
The point is, we both want Ralston. Now, the smart thing to do is for us to trail him together. Me and Blackwell, you and Wichita. How about it?
All right, Taggart.
Good. Good. I'll get word to Blackwell right away. He's on his ranch out of town a ways up near Crocker Mesa.
Well, he ain't a full-time deputy, huh?
This town can't afford one. I'll send word to him to meet us in the morning.
We'll be ready at sunup. That's keeping Blackwell, Taggart.
We'll be along any minute, Slaughter.
It's been an hour since the rain stopped. We're wasting time. That trail's going to get cold on us, even if we manage to pick it up in first place. And that ain't going to be easy.
Easier than you think, baby.
What do you mean, Taggart?
I had a talk with Wilkie down the stable last night. That stolen horse had thrown a shoe off of his left hind hoof. Wilkie didn't have a chance to put a new one on.
That'll help some.
Oh, here's Blackwell.
Sorry I'm late, gents. Busted the cinch strap saddling up and had to rig a new one.
No harm, Blackwell. 10 minutes isn't going to make much difference one way or another.
Does to me.
All right, gentle down, Slaughter. Now, I figure Ralston headed south, out of town towards the border. We'll cover that area first. Let's get moving, gents.
Looks like that was a bum hunch of yours about Ralston headed for the border, Taggart. We've covered every trail leading south out of Tombstone.
Well, like I say, Slaughter, everybody's entitled to one mistake. Gotta admit, it was logical to reckon he'd be headed straight south.
We covered most of the country west of town, too.
Well, we'd just keep circling. Maybe he took off to the north.
Hold up.
What is it?
Over there.
Tracks.
I'll take a closer look.
What about it, Blackwell?
Yeah? This is the one we're looking for, all right. No shoe on the left hind hoof.
Heading straight west.
Yeah. For the San Pedro River.
Let's move. The tracks lead right into the river.
Yeah, it's an old trick, but it still works. Probably rode up a downstream a ways, then out on the other side. This trail's gonna be tough to find again over there. That's pretty rocky ground.
So I see.
When we do pick it up again, I'll bet it turns south. I still think he's heading for the border.
Let's cross and split up. Two upstream, two downstream.
Right.
Whoever picked that trail on the other side fired 2 shots.
Right.
Dang, if I can figure a fellow like Ralston out, Slaughter. I sure never figured he'd take this way of paying you back for everything you've done for him.
Hold it here, Wichita.
What's the matter?
Let Taggart and Blackwell get out of sight around that bend. Now let's get back to the riverbank.
I don't get it, Slaughter.
We're not going to look for tracks on the other side of the river. We're going to look for them on this side.
I still don't know what you...
Get off your horse. Yeah. Now take a look. A close look at those tracks we've been trailing, Wichita. Well?
There's a little dry dirt in the bottom of each one.
Yeah. It was raining last night when Ralston's supposed to have stolen our money and the horse and made his getaway.
Yeah, rain stopped about an hour before sunup.
And these tracks were made after it stopped raining. That's why you see dry dirt with the hooves cut through the wet.
Wait a minute. You mean somebody rigged this trail to lead us on a wild goose chase?
It's just what we're going to find out. We worked our way along the riverbank. Half a mile upstream, we picked up the tracks coming back out of the river and circling. We followed them, headed northwest. 20 minutes later, we came over a rise and spotted a small ranch house in the hollow below. The only sign of life was a few buzzards clustered on a mound in a little gully behind the ranch. We left our horses concealed and worked our way down the slope under cover. The buzzards reluctantly took flight. We saw what had been buried in the mound, or what was left of it.
Ralston's body.
Yeah. Whoever stole our cattle money busted Ralston out of jail, forced him out here, and killed him.
Yeah. Question is, who done it? Whose ranch is this?
See over there to the right? It's Crocker's Mesa.
Crocker's Mesa? Taggart said Blackwell had a ranch near Crocker's Mesa, so Blackwell's our man.
Looks like it.
We better get back to that ranch house before Blackwell gets back.
Might be too late. If they figure we tumbled to the fake trail, they could circle back here to the ranch ahead of us.
They? You mean Taggart, too?
Let's soon find out. Keep down as much as you can. We'll circle around the corral.
There's Taggart on the porch with a rifle.
Get down. That answer your question about Taggart?
Sure does.
No doubt about it. They're in it together.
There he goes, inside the house.
We gotta bust him out of that house somehow. Wait a minute. That wagon there beside the corral.
Eh?
When I get the word, we'll head for it. Get behind it.
Yeah, all right.
Now.
Well, what now?
The ground slopes down to the house from here. Let's get this wagon moving. It'll cover us. Now, shout.
Sharp.
Stay close behind it. Be ready to shoot when it hits.
She's heading right for the house.
Stay low.
Yeah, sure will. There she goes.
Come on, fast.
Yeah, there's Blackwell at the window.
I'll get him.
Oh!
Hold it, Taggart. Drop your gun. Drop it.
All right, Slaughter. All right.
Don't try it. Hey!
My, he took a little convincing.
Where's the money, Blackwell? Where is it?
Under a loose board in the floor.
Loose board? I got it. Yeah. Here's our cattle money, all right. And the mine payroll.
Well, I guess that's that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Slaughter, appears to me you was taking quite a chance. Just a winging Blackwell and knocking out Taggart instead of gunning him down. You don't owe them no favors.
I wasn't doing him any favor, Wichita. I was just saving him.
Saving him? For what?
The citizens of Tombstone.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington. Written by Robert Stanley, with editorial supervision by Tom Hanley, and directed by William N. Robeson. Supporting Mr. Buffington were Junius Matthews, Sam Edwards, Vic Perrin, Lawrence Dobkin, Jack Moyles, and Frank Gerstle. Next week at this time, we return with...
Slaughter's the name. Luke Slaughter. When we meet up again, you can call me that. Luke Slaughter.
special score for Luke Slaughter was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Stay tuned now for Frontier Gentlemen, following immediately on most of these same stations of the CBS Radio Network.
From March 2nd, 1958, excuse me, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Coming up next is a show that I actually grew up listening to. Up until now, I've been airing mostly stuff from the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s, and occasionally early 1960s. CBS Radio Mystery Theater, hosted by E.G. Marshall, ran from 1974 to 1982 on the CBS Radio Network. Today's episode, this is from, let's see, January 24th, 1975. Here's the CBS Radio Mystery Theater on the Classic Gas Radio Show.
And now, Mystery Theater.
Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Now, what do you think of when you hear someone say, the spirit of 76? Fifes and drums? The Battle of Bunker Hill? Valley Forge? Most likely. But what isn't too well known is the fact that there was a spirit in 76. A spirit. A ghost. A demon. Indeed, a fearful, deadly apparition to whom all of us owe an almost incomprehensible debt. Because had we not been able to secure the good offices of this frightful phantom at precisely the right moment, well, we might still be subjects of his, I should say, her Royal Majesty.
Jabez Follinsbear, this court-martial has found you guilty of spying for the enemies of your sovereign, King George III.
But, General, I just been trying to fight for freedom.
It is the sentence of this court that you be hanged by the neck until dead.
General, I don't think he's going to stand for it.
Well, you don't think who is going to stand for it?
Windandingo, that's who. He's the old Indian spirit of justice. And these are his holy and sacred stamping grounds. He isn't going to let you hang me.
Oh, indeed. And how does this alleged spirit of yours propose to interfere with His Majesty's justice?
Oh, he'll think of something.
Well, he better think quickly. Sergeant, march the prisoner to the nearest suitable tree.
Our mystery drama, Windandingo, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Jack Grimes and Kurt Benson. ...1777 was hardly a vintage year for the American Revolution. We were losing. The British appeared to be so strong, so well organized, so wealthy, while we seemed so weak, so disrupted, so poverty stricken. What we needed so desperately was a victory. Of course, in October, that victory would be ours. In a backwoods settlement in New York called Saratoga, British General John Burgoyne would lose not only a battle, but an empire. He would lose it because, well, historians have advanced all sorts of strategic reasons, but nowhere among them will you find mention of an Indian demon called Windandingo. And no one speaks of an obscure American, Jabez Follinsbee. Jabez Follinsbee? Who could ever believe he would become a hero?
You're mad at me, John.
Oh, James, nope, I ain't mad.
No, I can tell. I can always tell.
I said I ain't mad, and now let's be done with it.
John, take me back with you.
Nope.
Why no? Because you're mad?
Because you just ain't cut out for soldiering.
But I just ain't cut out for farming either.
Yeah, I know.
I was practicing with your old musket, and I hit the tree every time at 50 yards. And that's a smoothbore. What, you just give me a Kentucky rifle or a, well, even a Pennsylvania, and I could hit a, well, I could be a sharpshooter.
Well, how come then you hit Enoch Fraser's prize bull?
There was an accident, I swear. I thought he was locked up in the barn, and so I wasn't watching.
Now, you promise me something, Jabe.
Yes, John, I will.
I'm taking you to Uncle Dick's Tavern up near Saratoga.
John, that's way north. It's like a foreign country.
Yeah, but there'll be someone to take care of you, so you've got to promise that you'll behave.
But I can take care of myself, John.
Jabe, do you want to win the war? Answer yes or no.
I guess so.
Well, you have to help out on the home front. And you can't have me coming back from General Gates' army to get you out of scrapes. You've got to do your part. You've got to. Now, what do you say?
Oh, there.
They're coming after us, boy. We may as well face it.
Who?
Look behind you.
It's Enoch Fraser and...
And the sheriff.
Hold in the name of the law. Caught you dead rights. Caught you in the act. Sheriff, place these felons under arrest.
Sheriff, you know we weren't running away.
Well, I know, John, I know.
I've got to get Jabe to his uncle's tavern up past Albany, and I only have a week's leave from the army.
I demand my rights, Sheriff. Jabez Follins be here, shot my prize bull. I demand compensation.
I'm willing to make good for him, Enoch. It's just that the army ain't been paid.
Am I supposed to wait, Sheriff? Throw him in jail.
Well, I was only practicing so I could join the army and fight for freedom.
What army would take a half-wit like you? I demand you arrest these two desperate brigands and throw them behind bars.
Now, everybody just shut up. Tomorrow morning, Judge McKenzie's going to be in town.
Yeah, but Judge McKenzie's Enoch Fraser's cousin.
It can't be helped. He's the only judge we got.
You throw them two desperados in jail, Sheriff.
We're all going back. Now, we'll spend the night at Frankenthal's Tavern.
But they'll escape.
John, now will you give me your word of honor? I don't want to put you and your brother in jail.
All right.
Done. Let's head back.
Well, Sheriff, I hold you responsible.
Oh, shut up, Enoch.
Well, can I ask you something, Enoch? Why don't you like me? What will I do to us, John?
I don't know.
But you're a captain in General Gates' army. That should mean something.
Yeah, I guess it would mean a lot more if we were winning.
John, you mean we ain't gonna win? Well, we gotta win. We just gotta. Why, we're fighting for freedom. Tell me we're gonna win.
Well, yeah, we're gonna win, I guess, but it's gonna take a whole lot longer than most folks think. You know how some folks are. They want everything yesterday.
Well, here are two really fine-looking boys. An asset to the town and a credit to the country. Mind if I join you, lads?
What's all this, Enoch?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll treat you to supper.
You will? Why?
Why? Because you're fighting for our country, John, and nothing's too good for you. And Mr. Frankenthal, beef and bread and beer for my two good friends.
What's on your mind, Enoch?
Well, now, boys, I got Jabe here for a good 16 pounds worth of damages. Agree?
Yeah, but I said I was sorry.
Oh, I know, son, I know. That's why I'm willing to offer John a proposition, a confidential proposition.
Yeah.
John, you and me, we're men of the world. Is that a fact?
You're talking.
I don't know. Well, now, it ain't our fight, John. Them Southerners want the land in the Ohio Territory. The merchants are looking to get more for their goods. The rabble-rousers are out to have a good time. What's all this to do with law-abiding New York farmers like us?
Enoch, I don't want to hear any more.
Now, sit her down, Mr. Frankenthal, and make sure them plates are kept full. Well, now, as I was saying...
I said I don't want to hear no more.
Well, that ain't like you, John. You was always a prudent man. prudent, that is, till you get swept up in this rebellion hip-hip hooray. Well, it gave a bunch of high-spirited boys a chance to play soldier.
Dave, don't you eat another bite.
Well, is something wrong
with the... It's a bread of treason.
Maybe you did win a couple of skirmishes against some poor, scared, imported German farm boys in red coats.
But... Oh, that evil spirit has caught hold of Enoch.
But now the British are sending in trained and seasoned regulars. General Burgoyne is marching down from Canada. General Howe's marching up from New York City. You'll be cut in half, caught in a trap.
That's how you see it.
A prudent man thinks of the future. Yeah. Therefore, he chooses the winning side.
And you think you have?
Oh, I know I have. And here's my proposal. As a captain in Gates's army, you'd have certain information.
You want me to become a traitor?
Oh, no. A lover of your fellow man. The war's lost. Why not end it sooner? End the waste of lives.
I ought to report this to the sheriff.
John, you just see the light. I'll forget about the damages to my prize bull. And he's worth 16 pounds.
I'll pay it.
Sure. But meanwhile, Jabe will have to sit in jail.
What? You wouldn't put poor Jabe in jail.
I'm entitled to justice. I'm entitled to my damages.
Jabez, you won't go to jail. I'll think of something.
What? There ain't a soul that can help you.
There is, too. I know who can help us. I know.
Do you know?
He's always helped me. When I called on him before, he'll help me again.
Jabe.
John, I'm going to call on my oldest friend.
You better call on your richest friend.
I'm going to call on him for justice. No, he'll help us. Jabe. You'll see.
Jabe, look, everybody's looking at
it
you.
It don't matter. He's my friend. He'll help. You remember Walking Beaver, the old Indian we gave food to?
Yeah, now you just come along with me, Jabe.
Before Walking Beaver died, he told me all about the secret Ojibwe spirit, a spirit that fights evil. He taught me how to call him. His name is Windandingo.
You hear that, everybody? Windandingo. What's that again?
Windandingo.
Windandingo. Now, if that ain't the funniest I ever
heard.
Don't laugh. Don't laugh at Windandingo.
Why not?
Because he don't like it.
Well, if he don't like it,
I'm warning you. I'm warning all of you. Windandingo don't like it.
All right. The joke's over. Any man here who laughs at my brother has to settle with me.
Hold on, everybody. We don't want no fighting. Now, John, you just take Jabe upstairs and put him to bed.
But, Sheriff, I don't want anything to happen to Enoch.
Nothing's going to happen to nobody.
But Enoch Fraser has got to say he's sorry to Windandingo. He's got to say it.
Hey, John, you better get him upstairs.
Hey, by Jiminy. Hey, by Jingo. I know your name. It's Windandingo. Fang of a wolf and an eagle's wing. I say your name is Windandingo.
Hey, who are you talking to, Jabe?
Yeah, but nobody, John. Nobody at all.
Yes, you were. That's why I woke up. I heard you say something. Oh, yes, it's that crazy thing. That Windandingo.
No, it ain't crazy. I've seen him.
You have?
100 times. Most folks are scared of him, but not me. All you have to do is ask for justice, and that's all I've done.
That's all you've done?
Windandingo's a good spirit, and I'm asking him to fight against the evil spirit that's taken hold of poor Enoch Fraser. Because it takes a spirit to fight a spirit, don't it?
Jabe, go back to sleep.
Yes, John. Tongue of a copperhead, horns of a moose, claws of a bear, feathers of a goose.
Jabe.
Hey, by Jiminy.
Jabe, shut up. I'm really sleepy.
But, John, this is the only time we can call Windandingo at midnight. It's the only time he's able to hear the voice of mortal man. And the clock just struck. Listen. He's here. That's his voice.
Jabe, that's just an eagle way off.
Listen.
Will you go back to sleep?
Help.
Who's that?
Sounds like Enoch Fraser.
Get him out of here. He's come to kill me.
Enoch must be having a nightmare.
Don't let him. Let me go. Let him.
Oh, Enoch does drink an awful lot.
Don't kill me.
No, it's Windandingo, all right.
Don't.
and justice is being done.
What?
I didn't think Enoch's crimes were that serious.
Well, he's quiet now. I guess he woke himself up from that nightmare.
No, he didn't wake up. He's dead.
That's enough, Jabe. I need my sleep.
And he brung it on himself. He got no one to blame but himself.
Jabe, will you shut up and get to sleep?
Boys. Boys, get up. Wake up.
Come up, Sheriff.
Shh, John. John.
What is it?
Boys, you got to leave.
You gotta... What's wrong?
Shh. Don't let no one hear. Get out of here as fast as your legs will take you and as far as your horse can go.
Why?
Enoch Fraser is dead.
He's dead?
Dead. Murdered.
But who killed him?
Who? Why, Jabez. Who else?
Who else? Well, we know who else. Or perhaps we think we know. It was Windandingo, the ancient Indian spirit. Or was it? The fact is, we know Jabez wasn't there while the deed was being done. But our knowing cannot help Jabez. After all, none of us will be able to appear as a witness. However, I shall appear again in just a few moments with Act Two. It is the fall of the year 1777. We're about a month away from the great victory at Saratoga that will turn the tide. And one of the principal characters who will decide the fate of the revolution is now deep in trouble in a little Hudson River town. His name is Jabez Follansbee, the same Jabez we met earlier. Impossible! How could Jabez be the principal character in anything? Well, don't sell our Jabez short. He has a great many hidden facets.
Nah, Sheriff, you know Jabe couldn't kill anybody.
I know, but it don't look good.
Jabe, did you kill Enoch?
No, John, I never killed anybody.
And he don't lie, Sheriff.
Except maybe that prize ball of Enoch's.
Look, boys, everybody heard Jabez threaten Enoch with this Windandingo.
No, Windandingo.
Well, whatever. And that was the name Enoch was screaming. You know how some folks are. They'll claim Jabe was guilty of witchcraft.
It's no witchcraft, just Windandingo bringing justice.
Sheriff, Enoch ate and drank like a pig. He had a nightmare and he died of indigestion.
Well, now, I'm sure that point of view will be considered at such time as cooler heads will prevail. But that time sure ain't gonna be tomorrow morning. Now, you two better be on your way faster than lightning.
John, you don't believe I killed Enoch.
But how could you? You were with me all the time.
Well, you could believe I had Windandingo do it.
I don't believe anything of the kind.
I didn't ask Windandingo to kill Enoch. All I asked for was justice.
Sure.
And it was justice Windandingo gave him.
Oh, there. There. Now. Before we go inside.
Huh?
Now, you promise me that you will do as Uncle Dick and Aunt Martha say. You'll keep out of scrapes. You won't fire guns.
John, can't you take me with you?
If you come with me, you'll have to kill people. Now, could you do that, Jabe? Could you shoot a man?
No. I still have bad dreams about that bull. Aunt Martha!
Why, it's John and Jabez.
Hello, Aunt Martha.
Boys, meet my nephews. The taller one's a captain with Gates' army. And the other one, he's come to help me. Both of you, come right over here.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, look at the two of you, how you've grown. Oh, Jabez.
How's Uncle Dick, Aunt Martha?
Well, boys, your uncle's a prisoner
A prisoner?
Captured at Ticonderoga. The Redcoats took it back from us. I don't know, it don't look good. The way General Burgoyne's headed here from Canada with 8,000-10,000 men.
I'd better be getting back to my regiment.
Oh, you ain't going nowhere till you had your dinner first. Now, you both sit down. I'll be right back.
You going back, John?
I have to.
You have to go and I have to stay. You'll be fighting for freedom and I'll be doing nothing.
You'll be doing your part, helping out here.
John, this war, it's the biggest thing that'll ever happen while I'm alive, and I'll have done nothing.
Don't say that. Who knows? You could wind up being a hero.
Oh, yeah.
I mean it.
Yeah, by sweeping out a tavern.
By being ready.
Being ready for what?
For whatever fate has in store.
Well, I look at myself, and you know what I say? I say, Jabez Follinsby, fate has got absolutely nothing in store for you. Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Mind the music and the step. And with the girls...
You there.
Yes, sir. You're a captain, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a captain.
I can tell from your uniform. My brother's a captain. He's with General Gates.
Yeah, well, where are the nearest American troops?
Well, I guess they're in Albany, Captain.
How far is that?
Oh, maybe 30 miles.
Did I get a fresh horse?
Yes, sir.
Now, son, listen. The British have broken through. General Burgoyne's headed this way.
They're coming. Aunt Martha, Burgoyne's army, they're coming.
I see him. I hear him.
Aunt Martha, I found a rifle in the hayloft.
You just leave it there. Leave it.
Yeah, but we just can't let Burgoyne's army go to Albany.
Yes, we can. Dave, the British are peaked, just like we are.
Yes, ma'am.
And they go to church.
Yes, ma'am.
And we're tavern keepers. It's an old and honored profession, and our duty is to dispense hospitality to all that cross our threshold.
Look at the mad Martha.
Look at them. Look how big they are. How they march. All the guns and cannon and wagons and everything. I guess you could really call them an army. Not like
what, Aunt Martha?
Nothing.
I don't care. I just bet our boys can fight better. Hey, look, that man with all the gold and the lace. Oh, ain't that some horse he's riding?
It must be General Burgoyne himself.
He's riding toward us.
Oh. You better get on your feet, Jane.
Right.
Over. Good day to you, madam. This, I presume, is Follinsby's Tavern.
Yes, sir.
And you would be Mrs. Martha Follinsby? And he would be your nephew, Jabez.
How did you know?
We have our information, madam.
You mean you're spies?
Well now, Jabez, don't look down your nose at spying. You may decide to try it yourself one day. Mrs. Follinsby, I'm told you prepare the best table in the province.
Oh, well,
I understand. You just as soon not feed a morsel nor bestow a drop upon the red-coated tyrants.
Oh, no, I never said it. Why, I was telling Jabe here just before that...
Yes, well, we shall pay. I might add at your usual pre-rebellion rates. None of your Yankee hanky-panky. Captain Sterling, the army will halt here. Parkhurst, have our baggage brought in. Well, Jabez, no need to look frightened.
Bob, I'm not frightened.
I haven't come here to hang you from that sycamore tree. Although if I did, would it be such a significant loss to anyone? Would it?
Well, sir, it would be a significant loss to me.
Come in.
You told Aunt Martha you wanted this wine, General, and here it is.
I see.
Aunt Martha wants me to clean up the room, too.
Yes. May I inquire, Jabez, that's a rather large knife you carry in your belt.
Yes, sir.
You look like a peaceable enough fellow. Why are you so well armed?
Well, I'm in the woods a lot, and you need a knife.
I must say, Jabez, I'm considerably relieved.
I'd overheard you and your aunt talking in the kitchen.
Ah, General.
Well, I wasn't eavesdropping. Well, the truth is, I was. Who can resist the temptation? And I heard you talking about fighting for freedom. I had assumed, perhaps, that you might strike a blow for freedom with that knife.
With the knife? Well, how?
How? By letting out the heart's blood of Sir John Burgoyne.
Sir, please don't say that. The idea of stabbing somebody, it makes... It makes me sick.
Well, what's this? You're actually trembling. Now, have some wine.
No, sir. That'll make me sicker.
Oh, I'm truly sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. But you must admit that the assassination of the tyrant commander, as I believe I'm called, would be a mighty blow for freedom.
No, sir. I ain't gonna admit that.
Why not?
Well, I've been thinking and thinking and... Well, I figure I'm willing to die for freedom. I'm just not willing to kill for it.
Sir, the dispatches have arrived. You have a communication from General Howe.
Do I have a letter from Mr. David Garrick in London?
No, sir.
Well, are you sure, Parkhurst?
Yes, sir. But this letter from General Howe...
But Garrick as good as promised he would produce my play this season.
Sir, this letter from General Howe...
Oh, the devil take General Howe. Damn it, Parkhurst. My Maid of the Oaks is as good a work as anything Garrick could put on the boards. Better.
This letter from General Howe in New York City is most urgent.
The devil take William Howe. Fanny Kemble herself wants to play the part and... Did you say a letter from General Howe in New York City?
Yes, sir.
What? Just what in the seven unholy names of Satan is Wee Willie Howe still doing in the city of New York? He should be halfway to Albany by now.
Well, sir, the letter was sent from New York. But General Howe is marching on Philadelphia.
Philadelphia? May I have that letter? And so, dear Burgoyne, the greatest assistance I can give you is to capture Philadelphia and thus prevent Washington from moving northward. Your obedient servant. Washington? He wants to save me from General Washington? That threadbare Virginia aristocrat and his pathetic rabble that masquerades as an army? Well, it's Gates and Morgan who threaten me here.
But, sir, what's to be done?
Well, we'll move back very quickly toward Fort Ticonderoga before the rebels can close in and cut us off. Jabez, bring me more wine. Quickly.
Yes, sir, General.
I want the army ready to march in 2 hours.
Jabe, I was listening at the door to every word. General Howe ain't coming. Burgoyne has to skedaddle back to Canada.
Well, that's a blow for freedom, isn't it?
It would be a bigger blow if Burgoyne was captured, taken with his whole army, the entire kit and caboodle, all them guns and horses and ammunition and supplies.
But how, Aunt Martha, how?
You're gonna do it, Jabe.
Me?
Yes, sir, you. You're going to be responsible for the capture of Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne and 8,000 of the best troops in the whole British Army. You, Jabez Follansbee.
Well, the only thing that can be said at this point in time is that she knows something we don't know. And she's right. Because as students of history, we know the end of the story. We know that Burgoyne and his army were captured. Now we shall expand that knowledge and discover how, when I return shortly with Act 3. Each must answer the call of fate. For some, it comes early, for others, late. And fate is now calling to Jabez Follansbee, a young man of New York State in the year of 1777. Proof again, if proof were ever needed, that some of the most remarkable and earth-shaking events occur not simply because of the actions of the rich and the powerful, but also through the unconscious intervention of the powerless and the lowly.
General Burgoyne can be captured by our General Gates. If
what, Aunt Martha?
If they can get here quick enough, Jabez. If Gates can only send some cavalry real fast, they could delay Burgoyne long enough for the rest of the army to come up and capture him.
But what can I do?
Oh, you can mount Mayflower. She's the fastest horse we got in the stable. And ride like the wind to where General Gates is camped. And tell him... Jabe, are you listening to me?
Yeah, Aunt Martha, I'm listening.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I can hardly believe it.
Believe what?
Well, what John said, and yet it's come true. John said, he said, if I was ready, fate would make me a hero.
Well, it has come true.
And I can fight for freedom without shedding blood.
You ain't got a minute to lose. Saddle up Mayflower.
I have to bring General Burgoyne a bottle of wine.
No, I'll do it.
Yeah, but he asked me...
Be on your way, Jabe. Every minute's as precious as gold.
Goodbye, Aunt Martha.
Goodbye, Jabe. And the good Lord bless you.
Captain Sterling has ordered all unit commanders to be ready to move in 2 hours.
But I want a screen of light cavalry on both flanks.
May I say, sir, that it's a brilliant maneuver?
No doubt. But back in London, it will be construed as an inglorious retreat.
But a most necessary one.
Yeah, to my political enemies, and I have a vintage crop this year, a retreat is always a disgrace.
But, General, to move an army so many miles through hostile territory is surely a feat worthy of it.
No, I shall be Burgoyne the bungler, while Howe will be the hero. Howe with his cheap victory at Philadelphia. Did I say cheap? It will cost us these 13 colonies. Where's my wine? Jabez!
Oh, General, you ordered this bottle.
Yes, and about time, too.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
I tell you, Parkhurst, this William Howe, he hasn't the sense, the brains, the intellect of this young servant, this Jabez Follansbee. Where is Jabez, Mrs. Follansbee?
Where's Jabez, sir?
Yes, madam.
Oh,
Yes?
Well, I sent him to the barn to
Yes, well, I wish to see him.
Oh, but he's got to chop some wood.
I wish to talk to him.
Oh, but begging your pardon, sir, unless he does his chores, you aren't going to have wood for your fire tonight or for me to cook your supper.
May I suggest a solution to the problem? I shall assign an orderly to the wood chopping, thus freeing Jabez for his more important duty, which is to speak with me. Fetch him, if you please. Madam, is there a difficulty I am unaware of? Why are you so nervous?
Me?
So frightened. And where is Jabez? Oh,
by the barn, chopping wood, sir.
I can see the barn very clearly from this window, but I neither see nor hear Jabez.
General, the boy was in here when I handed you the dispatch from New York City. Could he be off for General Gates's encampment?
Well, Mrs. Follansbee... Could he?
No.
Parkhurst, have a party of scouts go after him. Well, Jabez?
General, I guess you were wrong.
Wrong?
Well, you said you didn't come here to hang me to the sycamore tree outside, but those men who captured me said that's what you're
going to... I'm sorry, Jabez, but we have rules.
Oh, don't hang him. Why should you hang him?
Because he was conveying information to the enemy.
Who says so?
Now, madam.
Who says so? Well, maybe he just felt like taking a little ride on horseback. I mean, is that something to hang a man for?
I see. Well, that would, of course, place the case in an entirely new perspective. Is that what Jabez was doing?
Yes, sir.
Is it, Jabez? Were you merely out for a little ride? Or were you conveying information to General Gates? Oh,
tell him you were just out for a little ride, Jabez.
I was bringing information to General Gates.
Shall I ask that question again, Jabez?
No, sir. I heard it the first time.
Damn it, Jabez, do you want me to hang you?
No, sir, but I don't want to lie, neither.
General, the army is ready to march.
I know that, Parkhurst.
May I suggest we hang the prisoner and be on our way?
Jabez, I don't want to hang you.
I know that, sir. I appreciate that, but I can't lie.
Even if you have to die?
I won't die.
Oh, indeed. Why not?
Well, because that wouldn't be justice. And that's why Windandingo wouldn't let it happen.
I don't believe I caught that name.
Windandingo.
Yes?
Windandingo. He's the old Ojibwe Indian spirit of justice. And all through here, all through this country, it's his holy ground. And if you ask him for justice in the right way, he'll see you get it.
Yes. Well, my boy, I suggest you ask him.
I will.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Midnight.
Midnight?
Oh, yes, sir. You can't raise him till midnight.
But I intend to hang you now.
Well, you wouldn't do that, General. You're a fair man. You'd give a man a chance.
I am giving you a chance. Just tell me you were out riding for pleasure or to visit your girl, and we're quits.
I don't get any pleasure riding a horse, and I don't have a girl here.
General, every minute we delay...
Jabez, do you expect me to wait till midnight?
I expect you to do the right thing.
Well, what is supposed to happen at midnight?
I'll call on Windandingo.
Yes?
And he'll appear.
Where?
Right here. And only here.
Why?
Because this is where the injustice was first made.
And then?
And then? He'll see that you give me justice.
How?
I don't know, General. That'll have to be between you and Windandingo. He'll convince you somehow.
You mean... A spirit will materialize and convince me that it would be unjust to hang you?
Yes, sir.
Sir, shall the light cavalry be posted on the flanks now?
He will actually appear?
Yes, sir.
General, we need every minute.
Parkhurst?
Yes, sir.
Do you know what this lad is saying?
Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir.
A spirit, an Indian spirit, will appear here at midnight to plead for his life.
Sir, any hour now, the rebels will know about General Howe. We have just about run out of time.
No, Parkhurst, we run out of life. But time, there's enough and to spare. Look at that boy's face, Parkhurst.
I must remind the General...
He is the only completely honest human being you and I have ever met. Let us salute him.
Sir.
Now, Jabez... This Windandingo of yours, he will appear promptly at midnight.
General, is it possible you don't realize...
Parkhurst! I will deserve disgrace if I run from this continental rabble. I've decided to stay, to fight, and to break the back of this impertinent rebellion. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Jabez, will your Windandingo appear promptly at midnight?
Yes, sir, he will. You'll see him.
I had better... Because if I do not, if you are playing me false, then I shall hang you. Hang you from the bough of that sycamore tree. I shall hang you by the neck until you are dead. And leave you dangling for the kites and crows to feast on your carcass. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Sir. I wish to report that it's midnight.
I'm aware of that, Parkhurst.
Also, word from the outposts. Enemy signs on the left flank.
Thank you, Parkhurst.
There may still be time to break out, sir.
That will be all.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's midnight, Jabez. Jabez?
Hey, by Jiminy. Hey, by Jingo. I know your name. It's Windandingo. Fang of a wolf and an eagle's wing. I know your name. Is Windandingo.
Is he a wolf? An eagle? What, Jabez?
Tongue of a copperhead, horns of a moose, claws of a bear, feathers of a goose.
Where is he, Jabez?
I know your name. It's Windandingo.
Well?
Windandingo. I don't know, General. I don't know. He's always showed up before.
Were you lying to me?
No, sir. Those words always fetched him.
Admit you were lying.
But I was telling the truth.
Say you were frightened.
No, it's the truth.
You made it up to save your life.
I tell you it's true.
Admit it's a lie, and I'll spare your life.
But I've seen him. I know him.
For that, Jabez, I shall hang you.
Windandingo! Windandingo!
There is no Windandingo. But there is a Major Parkhurst,
and I shall order him to assemble an execution squad.
Windandingo, Windandingo, I know your name. It's Windandingo.
There is no Windandingo.
Listen.
Well, it's a quiet night. I can hear an eagle screaming in the distance.
Listen.
Can that be a bear prowling about?
The hissing of a snake, the call of a moose, the growl of a bear, the cackle of a goose. It's Windandingo.
There is no... Windandingo.
You hear him.
I...
And you see him.
Well, I think I see something. A shape of a man.
Two. A snake.
A bird. It has feathers. The hair.
Claws, fangs. You see him, you see him.
What is it?
It's Windandingo.
No, it isn't possible. It doesn't exist. These things don't exist.
It's Windandingo.
Oh, I'm dreaming.
You're awake.
I had too much to drink.
It's Windandingo.
What does he want with me?
Listen to him.
I'm listening. I can't hear a word.
He talks without words. He's in your mind. Listen to what he's saying. He gets angry if you don't listen. What is Windandingo saying?
Spare his life. Give him justice. Give all people justice. Without justice, there is only death. 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 Jabez, I never wanted to.
General! General Burgoyne, help!
What have you done to the general?
Well, I didn't do nothing.
General, are you all right, sir?
Where did it go?
Where did what go?
But it was just standing there.
What was just standing here?
Oh, Jabez.
Yes, General.
You're a young scoundrel.
But, sir...
I really should hang you.
Windandingo was here.
But I won't. On one condition. Give me your solemn oath. Go join Gates's army.
Sir, I really am not much for fighting.
Jabez, there's nothing so destructive to the smooth operation of an army, indeed a government, as a completely honest man. You've done enough damage here. Now take your talent for disruption over to your own people. It's perhaps the best chance we British have to win this war.
Well, Jabez did manage somehow to join General Gates' army, and he fought side by side with his brother John. However, Burgoyne's cynical hope was not to come true. After all, we did win the war. So you see, Jabe's honesty, sincerity, and idealism didn't do us too much damage at that time. I'll be back shortly. In case you're wondering what happened to Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne, he went home to become richer and more powerful than ever. He spent the rest of his life writing plays. And they say one of them was about a powerful Indian spirit. Unfortunately, many of his papers have been lost. A pity. However, if they ever find that play, we'll present it here for you on Mystery Theater. Our cast included Jack Grimes, Court Benson, Mason Adams, Earl Hammond, and Bryna Rayburn. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
This has been the Classic Gas Radio Show. If you liked it, please subscribe. And thank you for listening. This is a Wild Hare podcast.